moxie, force of character, determination, or nerve. I'm Sierra Benson, and you're listening to The Moxie Mindset. This podcast is designed to help you grow a healthier, growth-oriented mindset. I've reached out to college professors and professionals who have agreed to come into the studio to help us learn more in depth about the communication and leadership skills we need to succeed. Thank you for joining us on The Moxie Mindset. I'm super stoked for today's episode. Claire Canfield is a consultant and lecturer at Utah State University with degrees in communication studies and a graduate certification in alternative dispute resolution. I've been personally mentored by Claire for the past year or so now, and I can honestly say that he has completely changed the way I think and feel about conflict. Claire believes that these different approaches to conflict unlock the possibilities of conflict and empower us to create the change we want in the world around us, in our relationship, places of work, communities, and most of all, within ourselves. Thanks for coming on today, Claire. I'm so excited to have you with us for the Moxie Mindset. We've had a good year or so of diving into communication and conflict and what all that entails. So when I asked you to come on, you brought up the topic of active listening, which for some people sounds like an everyday occurrence. We have listening every day of our lives. So what made you want to bring up listening as your topic?
Yes, here, I think what you said there was really interesting. You know, you mentioned it's something that we think we already do. It might be something that we don't give a lot to of thought to, or that we take for granted. Because I think sometimes we believe listening is just not talking, or that listening is what we do when we're waiting for our turn to speak, or that listening doesn't involve a focus on what is most important, but just something that we do passively. And I have some, I guess, different perspectives on that. And I think listening is something that we can do and learn without a lot of effort. A lot of the things that I teach, like trying to change the way you manage conflict, can take a fair amount of time and effort to shift your paradigm and develop skills. But I think listening is actually a skill that you can develop pretty quickly. And it begins with choosing to just approach it really differently.
And how do you choose to approach listening differently?
Well, one of the first things is to recognize perhaps some of the poor listening habits we have, or the things that we take for granted with it. So one poor habit that I think many of us have is that we're frequently listening to respond, that our mind is engaged with not just how do I understand what the other person is saying, but rather how do I respond to what they're saying? What am I going to say next? So that might be, what's the advice that I can give to help them fix the problem that they're expressing right now? Or how can I say something that will help me be more connected to them, or relate to them, or compare favorably to them? These are, I think, sometimes the way that we are approaching what's happening as the other person is talking. I think we also don't allow much silence when we're listening. We just stay quiet long enough for the other person to stop speaking. And then maybe when they take a breath, we jump right in. And I think silence can be really valuable, but it's something that many of us are uncomfortable with. Like here we have in this podcast, like silence would be death, right? Like you don't want, you want there to be silence. You work on the radio as well, right?
Yeah.
I suspect that you've been trained very well to never allow any silence to exist. There always has to be something happening, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Radio silence means someone has to get up there quick and turn it right back on.
Yeah. And I think I think there's a lot that can be happening in silence. And then when we're willing to include silence in our listening, to just continue to wait and be present with the other person, it allows them to reflect more deeply, say what they want to without us getting in the way. So those are a couple of the things that, you know, come to mind about the common habits that we have around listening.
What do you feel drives us to want to reply so quickly in relation with someone? I notice that when I'm in a conversation with others and I want to be able to be related to them and have that connection with them, is it wrong in wanting to share my experiences? Do I just let it have that silence? How do I go about that?
Well, I'm not really in a position, I think, to judge whether you're wrong or right. I haven't found it very useful for me to spend a lot of time layering judgment over other people's choices. I've got plenty of my own stuff to look at. But I do think, as you said, you know, there's something about what's important to us or what we're trying to get out of it, that oftentimes when we're listening, the focus isn't really on the other person, but on ourselves. Like, what are they thinking of us? How am I going to respond? How are they thinking or feeling about me? That oftentimes when we're listening, the focus is on ourselves and not the other person. And that might be some of the reason, as you asked, Sierra, that we might be really quick to be responding or trying to jump in there with our own story, because we're mostly focused on us, which makes sense. I just don't know how effective that is because of the impact that it has on other people. When I go into a conversation and I'm thinking mostly about myself, I think it has a different impact on the person I'm interacting with than when I'm considering them and trying to understand them. And just that shift in focus away from myself to the other person seems to make a pretty big difference for me.
I love where you pointed out that you shouldn't be focusing on yourself when you're actively listening. How do you get to that point when we've been so trained in our society to be thinking about how do I present myself in this nature, in this context and conversation, and start really turning towards other people, especially when it's a leadership circumstance or even when you just need someone to feel heard?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Sierra. And what's interesting is that it seems to me to be that the answer seems to be really counterintuitive. You would think that if I'm going to benefit myself, if I'm going to be seen as a leader, if people are going to look at me positively, to like me, to see me as competent, then I need to focus on how I can come off as best I can, right? Again, the focus would be on myself. But what I've found is that if you ask people to consider the best listeners in their life, right? If they just had to kind of identify who are the people in all of the interactions that they've had that they consider to be the best listeners, I've asked actually thousands of people this question. And when they come up with that list, I always ask them, you know, consider how you feel or how you think about this person. And I ask them, do you respect them? Do you like them? Do you love them? And in most situations, it's all three. And I've never met anybody that doesn't consider one of the best listeners in their life as somebody that at the very minimum they respect. So when you shift away from yourself and you're focusing on the other person, you're actually doing far more for how that person is going to see you than if you were worried about how that person is going to see you. I think listening and being present with other people is an incredible gift that we can offer them. And people appreciate that, right? People appreciate when the focus is on them and they feel understood and they see the other person as offering this gift. And it's a powerful, powerful feeling that comes with it. There's this interesting project that I ran across. I think it's called Urban Confidential or something like that. I can't exactly remember the name of it, but one of the founders had a quote that I really like. What they do in this organization is they offer free listening. So there'll be people that just have a sign that say like free listening, and they'll stand on a street corner and just offer anybody that needs somebody to listen that gift. And, you know, one of the founders of this once said that the feeling that we experience when somebody listens to us is so much like love, it's difficult for us to tell the difference. And I think when we're offering that gift, people really respect that we care that much about them, and they appreciate that we're extending ourselves on their behalf to just be present with them. So I think it's kind of interesting, that question that you ask. You know, we're trying to be good leaders. How can I do that without, you know, focusing on what I'm going to say and how I'm going to come across? Well, what works is doing exactly the opposite of that.
It seems very counterintuitive, as you said earlier.
Yeah, not easy to do, because most of us, you know, pick up a lot of poor listening habits. Like I said, we're taught that silence is something you should avoid, and what we value most is talking. So it's tough. It's tough to develop different types of habits around listening when everything we've taught or experienced tells us to do something else.
How do we become more comfortable in that silence, especially when I've heard stories or studies saying we can't sit in like 6 to 12 seconds of silence without wanting to break it?
Yeah. Yeah, I've noticed that sometimes in my class, after I ask a question, I'll just mentally count in my head, and it never gets past 15. I think that's the number that they came up with. So most people just can't handle that silence. So I think one of the things that's helped me deal with that silence or be able to be more present is to appreciate what it's offering, right? That silence is expressing to the other person that I'm here, and that I'm comfortable being here with you, and that I'm going to leave you whatever space you need to express yourself. And when they feel they're done, then I like to ask an open, honest question that allows them to keep exploring and considering what they have to say. But I also, you know, have become more comfortable with silence by just noticing my own emotions that I experience in silence, and trying to make sense of those and be okay with whatever comes up and whatever I feel in those moments. That helps me be more present and be okay with the silence.
It's funny, as you're talking about this and I'm sitting in the silence, like trying to come up with a question to ask, especially on a podcast, you're like, I can't have any silence in here. But I want to be present and understand you, and simultaneously have questions on hand when you're done. Where do you draw the line between controlling and having that storage of open, honest questions to understand someone better, and sitting in that silence as a way of understanding versus I don't know what to say?
Can you talk a little bit more about, you know, that idea of control, and what you think some of the things are that we're doing to control in these conversations?
Yeah, I can take it in this specific context in podcasts, but I also see it play out a lot when I'm trying to stay present with someone in a conversation, and I'm trying to be intentional and listen to them and try to understand where they're coming from and the needs that they have. And in that, I'm wondering in the back of my mind, should I be asking them a question about this that they keep bringing up? And then I dwell on that, and then I snap out of the present and start thinking about the questions I need to be asking them, or how effective is this silence that I'm bringing to the table? Mm-hmm. Is it actually effective for them? And so I start getting into this mode of maybe it's control, maybe it's I don't know what to do in this situation. People, when they might try active listening, they might do it and then just say, okay, well, then I'm going to mirror what they said. And then they're going to feel understood. But then where do I go? And I am also, especially in podcasting, I have to be very present in what you or anyone else that comes on the podcast is saying, and then be able to come up with a effective and knowledgeable question at the end of the guest's conversation to draw them into another field.
Yeah. So what I noticed myself, you know, thinking about as you were talking, Sierra, is you mentioned several times about like what you're thinking about as they're talking, or, you know, feeling like I need to do this. I think you're pointing out something really important about why listening is so difficult. And you're highlighting that listening takes effort and some work. Like if you're being silent and not just waiting for the other person to stop talking so you can talk, well, what's going on for you as they're speaking? And I think you highlighted how much can be going on in our head. Like our minds have this capacity to be pulled in multiple directions, and our thoughts can feel like they're going at the speed of light, and it's hard to slow all that down. I mean, it's sometimes referred to among folks who do meditation practices as monkey mind, right? It's like you've got a monkey in your head that just, you know, it's constantly distracted and pulling at you in a thousand different directions. I had a sister who spent some time living in Bali, and there were a couple of kind of monkey reserves or kind of spots where just there were monkeys everywhere. And they would come and just like pick at her and steal her food and grab her hat. And they were just like everywhere going mad. And so it's a good image for me to think about how my mind can just get monkey, right? It just, just goes wild. And how do you still that? How do you slow that down so that you can be present? So some of the things that help me, one is if I'm breathing and paying attention to my senses of what's happening in my body, it helps me get out of my own head and stop swirling in those thoughts. So sometimes a couple of deep breaths while I'm trying to listen helps to ground me back in the moment. Sometimes it's paying closer attention to what I'm seeing while the other person is talking. I think listening is a full body experience. You use your full body to pay attention to the other person's full body, because so much of what we're trying to express to people doesn't just happen through our words. And if I can pay attention to what's going on their face and see the emotions that flash quickly across people's face, or see how their body shifts and changes depending upon what they're talking about and how important it is to them. Like when I can pay more attention to my senses, it gets me out of that monkey mind thoughts racing. And then I can start to focus those thoughts on just trying to understand what is the other person trying to express? What's important to them about this? And certainly that, again, takes me away from focusing on myself to focusing on the other person.
And what is it that's important to you in active listening, especially?
I think people are incredible. We have these deep desires and hopes. We all have emotions, and including fear and doubt joy, uncertainty. I think we're incredibly complex and interesting, and everybody has value as a human being. Yet, I don't know that we always feel like other people see us as whole people.
And I think we're hungry to be seen. I have three daughters, and growing up, it would be funny. They'd be like jumping on the trampoline and learning how to do flips or a trick or something like that. And as soon as they figured something out, they would have to be like, Dad, watch this, you got to see this. And I think we've all been there, right? We want to be witnessed. We want somebody to see us. Look at what I'm doing and how I'm feeling, and like witness who I am and see me. And we stop asking for that so directly once we get older. We stop telling people, just look at me type of thing. Although maybe there is a little bit of that going on. Maybe there's a lot of social media that's like, look at me. But really what we're hoping for is that somebody is going to see us and witness us. And when that happens, it's something kind of unique and special. I know what it feels like when I believe another person really understands and sees me. And it's an incredible experience and feeling. It's connecting, it's fulfilling, it's validating. And I think all of us hunger for that. And this is a way to fill that hunger. Just be present, pay attention, and focus, and witness other people. And I think it's a gift that we can give them that all of us need.
I love how much it means to you, and I hope that it shows everyone who's listening how important it is to not just you, but the person that's in that space with you, being heard, feeling understood. When you're approaching a conversation where you know that someone needs to be heard, how do you prepare for that? How do you get present so that you can be there listening, understanding, and holding that space for them?
I think a few of the things that I do, and I refer to this as just kind of like grounding myself so that I can be more present in the moment. I mentioned breathing. That's always helpful to me. Paying attention to my senses is always helpful to me. And another thing is grounding myself in my values and what I care about. And when I can sense that somebody needs a witness and somebody needs a good listener, then it's helpful for me to remind myself that I care about that, person, or I care about this idea of people being seen and witnessed and understood. And that helps me to get more present and get out of my own head and worries. Like, there's time for me to go back to my emotions and my needs and what's going on for me. But in that moment, it's helpful for me to remind myself why I'm doing it, why it's important to me. And that tends to ground me pretty well.
Awesome. Thank you. Is there anything else that you feel is tied to active listening that needs to be heard?
Yeah, I think a big part of active listening is also understanding that our responses are a part of our listening. So it's pretty common for us to respond after we listen to somebody with something like advice, or analysis, or judgment. Like, those are the easy responses that we have. But they often express to the other person that we don't really understand or empathize with them. So I think it's useful to consider, what responses do I want to engage in after somebody has expressed themselves? And for me, the one that has made the biggest difference is responding with open and honest questions. Instead of turning the conversation towards, here's how to fix you, or here's what's wrong with this, or what I think about this, I'll just ask a question that lets a person continue expressing themselves and also looking more deeply at what's going on for them, what they care about, what's difficult for them, what choices they want to make, because I believe they have the capacity to figure that out. If I will be a good enough listener and provide them enough space to figure that out. So that's another big one for me, is how do I respond after they have expressed themselves? And I love somebody that's willing to just ask me another good, open, honest question and let me keep talking so that I can work through things. Because I never came to you because I thought you could fix it. I came to you because I trusted that you would see me, not judge me, understand me, and give me a spot where I can work through things, figure some stuff out.
It's nice to realize that listening isn't just one piece of the conversation. It's the whole conversation.
Yeah.
And kind of, it's really interesting to realize it is the process of which a conversation is built on, instead of a component of a conversation. And when you're responding with these open, honest questions, what does that actually entail? What do these questions look like? How can we start using them in an effective way?
Yeah, it's a great question, Sierra, because it's frequently what people ask me, well, what does that look like, or how do you do that? And I think it's a skill that takes a lot of practice, but it does involve having to know the exact question that you should ask, or developing, you know, a list of questions that you can pull out at any given moment. Like, I have a couple of questions that seem to be useful on an ongoing basis, but most of the time, my best open and honest question is just listening really intently to the other person, and they'll usually say enough for me to ask three or four potential questions, as long as they are open and honest. So an open question is one that I don't close off the ways in which they could express themselves. Like a classic closed-ended question is one that a lawyer would ask, right? Did you or did you not? It's a yes or no. It's narrowed down so that the person doesn't have a lot of room to explore how they're going to respond. When we open a question, it allows a person to go wherever they need to go within their mind and in expressing themselves. And so I want to take off the limitations of what they can explore and how they can express themselves. The more I can do it, the more open a question is. For me, an honest question is one that doesn't come with a hidden agenda. It doesn't come with expectations of how you're supposed to answer it. And I certainly can't think that I already know the answer, or it's not an open question. I've asked plenty of dishonest questions in my life where I already thought that I knew the answer. So much so that if a person gives me an answer that's different from what I thought, I'll just discard it. I won't even believe that they're telling me the truth. I don't know if you've ever done that before, but I've asked a question and I was so certain that I already knew the answer that I wasn't really listening, and it wasn't really an honest question. So an honest question for me comes from a place of I don't know, I don't expect, I don't have an agenda, and I just want to understand. And there's a lot of questions that we can ask that fit that description of being open and honest. Some that I like that have always helped me is when I'll ask people to help me understand that, or what's that like for you? Talk more about that. Like, just give them an opportunity to keep expressing and exploring and figuring out what's going on for them.
How have you found that these questions open up a deeper understanding of what they're trying to say
Yeah. So like for me, I've noticed that I have this tendency to get kind of stuck in some of my problems or thinking, to where I can't really see outside of myself. You know, sometimes the phrase, you can't see the forest for the trees, like I'll just get kind of lost. And even though I'm thinking about it a lot, it's not until I actually talk it out or express it that I start to understand what I'm thinking or feeling. I don't know if that makes sense. Like once I had a mentor who said, you don't really know what you think until you write it. And I think for some people that's true, right? Like writing it down seems to make it more real, or it allows you to express it or understand it in a different way. For me, that's always been, I don't really understand what I'm thinking until I talk it out, mm-hmm. or I speak it. So when I have somebody who's willing to let me talk it out or express it, I find that I gain insight on myself. Sometimes I'm actually surprised by the words coming out of my mouth. I'm like, oh, okay, that's what I'm thinking or feeling right now. And it almost surprises me. Those kinds of open, honest questions give me that space to see myself in a different way, understand myself differently, and work through and figure things out by talking it.
Yeah. I know through personal experience, I have had some breakthroughs when in a space where someone is just there to listen. It's brought a lot of insights in the past year that have helped me truly grow. And that's just because someone was willing to listen and sit there with me and witness what I had to say.
Yeah. And that reminds me of what you said earlier that I loved, which was, consider a conversation that could be just about you listening, right? That going into it, that's your entire focus, that the whole conversation can be about, I'm just choosing to listen and witness. And what you just expressed there is that people have done that for you before, and it's been a gift, and you've had some breakthroughs and you've learned some things about yourself. Hats off to those people that gave you that space and just chose to come in to listen. And that was it.
For real. I have noticed how much appreciation I do have for them. And tying back into what we've said earlier, where we always feel like we have to talk in order to look respectable or appreciated. But for most, it's those who take the time to listen that we truly do respect and appreciate and come to really love.
Yeah. It's funny, you were talking and it reminded me of this quote that I'm not going to get right, but it was something along the lines of, you know, better to say nothing at all, to keep yourself from looking foolish than to open your mouth and take away all doubt. Something along that lines. Like we often think that the way people are going to respect us and see us as competent is by what we're saying. But yet that it might be better and it might be more effective to just be present and listen. I think it's more respected and seen as more competent and valuable than us talking all the time.
Yeah,
I say a lot of stuff, but I'm not sure how much of it is really valuable. But I know that every second I'm a good listener is valuable to the other person.
Oh. Wow. That was good. That was a good mic drop. Thank you.
A lot of things. Every now and then something comes out that might be useful. You might have to just cut the rest of the podcast and skip straight to that. But I'm glad, I'm glad that eventually we came around to something useful.
Everything today has been so useful. Thank you, Claire. I've appreciated the conversation that we've had. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. And I ask my guests two questions every time they come on. And the first is, what would you tell your younger self?
Tell my younger self. I'm afraid my younger self might not have listened to anything that I have to say. depending on how far back, how much younger myself is. I'm trying to think of something that I would have listened to. Maybe just to trust that it's going to be okay. I think I had a lot of doubt and uncertainty in a lot of my younger years as I was trying to navigate through life and figure out who I was and what I was going to do and what my career would be and what I was called to. And there was a lot of anxiousness and fear around that. And my path to where I am today was really winding. Yet I needed every single one of those twists and those turns. All of them were valuable. So I hope that I could tell my younger self to trust and be patient and that nothing is wasted. And I hope that that would land and sink in so that I could have maybe made it through some of those difficult, darker times with a little bit more hope and grit.
Mm. Thank you. That's definitely needed. I think especially now. I know me personally, it's been a heck of a year. Right. Not where I thought I would end up by any means.
Yeah.
But I think that we'll all pull through and it will all be okay. And the second question is, where can we find you, Claire, if we have questions, if we're at Utah State, maybe we're a listener from afar? What's a good place to find you?
Hopefully wandering across the quad among a sea of students at some point. That would be nice to have happen again.
For real.
I love being at Utah State. I teach there, and you can certainly find me there. I'm in the Languages, Philosophy, and Communication Studies department in the College of Humanities and Social Sciences. So you can find me at Utah State if you're a student there. Love to see you in a class. You can find me online. I have a small social presence online, not much of one. Instagram, I think it's a collaborative conflict. And you can find canfieldconsulting.net is my consulting page. So you can also find my TED Talk on YouTube. If you Google my name, Claire Canfield, or The Beauty of Conflict, you can, you know, see a few things that I have to say about that.
Awesome. Thanks. And what are you up to in the fall?
Well, this fall, I will be teaching classes at Utah State on conflict, and in particular, an advanced conflict class where I'll be talking a lot about these listening skills and other communication skills that I think make spaces for people to explore their truths, to get unstuck when they're in difficult conflicts, to figure out what's important to them. And I'm hoping to develop a Center for Collaborative Conflict at USU that will provide additional resources to students who need that, and start a undergraduate certificate program in conflict management. So a lot of things going on in the fall, hopefully a lot of it in Logan.
Awesome. Great. I've loved this conversation, Claire. Thank you for coming on, for helping me and doing a podcast with me.
Thanks, Sierra. I appreciate what you offer of yourself to others and for your good intentions and desires and willingness. I see that and really appreciate that in you.
Thank you.
Have a great day, Sierra.
You too. Hey, it's Sierra, and I hope you enjoyed that episode. I hope it led you to a more positive mindset, a more defined view of leadership, and some action items to take along with you. For more information, you can check out the Moxie website at themoxiemindset.org. Thanks for tuning in today, and I'll see you next week on The Moxie Mindset.